Bloody Elbow presents the sixth round post-fight show, which gives you a rundown and full analysis of the bouts that took place on this weekend's UFC event.
Hey everybody, welcome back to the sixth round post-fight show with me, Zane Simon, and my co-host, as always, Eddie Mercado. We are coming to you guys right after the conclusion of the last UFC fight card of 2021, UFC Fight Night, Lewis versus Daukaus, UFC Vegas 45, and a quality fight card from the UFC.
Fantastic, Zane. This was fantastic. Every fight was pretty much entertaining or special in some sort of way. Yeah. 13 fights altogether, 10 of them finished. And I mean, we had inverted triangles. We had like wonky knee to the body when one guy was on one knee kind of situations. Mm-hmm. We had a super heavyweight head kick.
Yep.
We had two guys who were unranked who finished guys who were ranked. Like, it was just a fantastic – we had veterans like Cub Swanson in full form doing his thing. Like, it was just such a great night. I'm ecstatic right now. I'm so high off this card.
It was a good time. The co-main, a little bit of a letdown. But as we've said in the past several times now, a really good card has a little of everything. And that was just like a nice calm moment between a very good back-and-forth fight between Amanda Lanamos and Angela Hill into a KO from Derek Lewis, Chris Daukaus. I can't feel like I lost anything out of a smothering performance from Bilal Muhammad.
No, I actually enjoyed it because I was on results, highlights, and play-by-play duty for Bloody Elbow. So I had a whole lot of typing to do. So the more positional control from the top of half guard that was going on for Muhammad, the better it was for me.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, well, let's jump in and talk about this main event. Derek Lewis getting the knockout over Chris Daukaus. And, you know, this wasn't like some momentous occasion for Lewis. It's not the biggest fight he's had. It's not the biggest knockout he's had. It was a nice, you know, it set a record for him for most knockouts in UFC history, which is cool. But I will say it was a pleasant change of form from Lewis.
Yeah.
Because this is the first knockout I can think of in a while now, like a serious minute where Lewis started the fight. He started pushing forward and being aggressive and got the knockout purely through that aggression and early in a fight without having to go through hell to get there. You know,
yeah, that's a scary Derek Lewis.
Mm-hmm.
You got, I mean, arguably the most powerful puncher in mixed martial arts, just slowly and methodically stalking you and coming after you. Talk about being uncomfortable. That's some uncomfortable pressure right there. Mm-hmm. Like, it's one thing when he'll sit back and back himself up to the cage and you can kind of pick your own shots and move at your own pace. But when he's setting the tempo, damn that.
Yeah.
Damn that. That is scary.
It's interesting to see if this is ends up being a new wrinkle in his game, because, you know, one of the big sort of momentous shifts in Derek Lewis's career that made him a title contender in the first place was learning to be patient, was learning that he didn't have to go after people. He didn't have to go wild and try to put them away. He could just be calm, let the fight come to him, let whatever was going to happen, and find his own spot in there to finish the fight. And if he's now getting to a point where he's comfortable enough with that, that he can start pushing forward and start being a little more aggressive and start creating those opportunities, like, that would be a huge next evolution for Derek Lewis. Because the guy, you don't want to see him have fights like the way he lost to Cyril Gane, where he basically just laid back, sat back, and let Gane just pick him to pieces.
Right, which was honestly kind of his MO. I mean, look at the same thing that happened with Volkov before he knocked him out.
Same thing that happened with Junior Dos Santos. Same thing that happened with Mark Hunt. Yeah. You know, you can go back a ways and Derek Lewis has lost fights like this before. And so for him, if he can, if this is the start of a trend for Derek Lewis, I would be damned excited to see it, because he probably just at some point realized in this, he got hit a few times by Daukaus and realized, if we're going to hit each other at the same time, if I can just go trade with this guy, every time we trade is going to be a huge swing in my favor. You know?
Absolutely. I mean, watching Derek Lewis step on the gas when there's actually gas in the tank to be mm-hmm. used up, that is, oh, I'm so here for it, man.
Yeah.
It tickles my fancy. And that kind of Derek Lewis can beat anybody.
Yeah, absolutely. He's got the power. He is the most powerful man in that division when it comes to pure punching. So,
and Zane, you always say that true MMA doesn't happen above 170 pounds. And this is like the perfect example.
Yeah.
Daukaus, he has all the skills, the technique, the quickness in his hands, but this is heavyweight, and none of that matters.
Yeah, doesn't hit as hard as Derek Lewis, and like chin and power are the two things that decide heavyweight fights first and foremost before anything else. And Derek Lewis hasn't always had the best chin in the world, but he has far and away the most power, and I'm super thrilled to watch him just make that the entire difference against Daukaus. I picked Daukaus here. I could not be happier to see Derek Lewis come in and just put it on and look like a true veteran against a guy who ran his way up the division and wasn't ready.
Yeah, no kidding. But it's, you know, what's crazy is Lewis gets on the mic and he's all saying how he doesn't want 5-round fights and he only wants 3-round fights.
Yeah.
And like, I get that, and that's all good and well and funny. But like, seriously though, where does he go from here? Like, he's fought everyone now.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
everybody.
The big thing for him is that he's just gonna, until he can win enough fights in a row, you know, I think the big thing he can do is if Francis Ngannou beats Ciryl Gane, there is a fight still to be made for him against Francis Ngannou again. It's a sucky fight that we hated the first time, but he has a right to it. He won that fight. The other thing is, otherwise, just to wait and look at the fact that there is actually, you know, which Daukaus was a part of, there's a heavyweight class of prospects coming up that Derek Lewis can otherwise just sit there and gatekeep against, you know. Tom Aspinall is fighting Shamil Abdurakhimov out here. Alexander Romanov looks like he's set to make a run up the division. There are a few heavyweights out there that are doing things and winning fights, and
couple, not a lot.
Not a lot. I mean, but that's heavyweight. A couple is kind of a big deal for heavyweight. And
a bunch of rematches. And
well, the other thing people were just calling for immediately after this, and which honestly I would totally be fine and happy to see, and I don't care that it doesn't make sense rankings wise, is Derek Lewis tied to Tuivasa.
Well, yeah, of course. I mean, Tuivasa will go out and bang and willfully get knocked out. Like, yeah. Sure, that would be fun for – that would please the blood gods or whatnot.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Get your sacrifices in. But, like, I mean, Tuivasa just got cut from the UFC not too long ago. Like, let him fight people he should be fighting.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Derek Lewis is that it's always going to be fun to watch him fight. So, you know, if he rematches Volkov at some point, I'd be happy to see that. I'd be interested. Hell, if he rematches Blades at some point, I'd be happy to see that. It's not like Blades wasn't winning that fight on the feet before getting knocked out.
I can't even believe he won that fight, to be honest with you.
Yeah. So there are rematches, but a lot of them are rematches I'd still be fine watching, you know?
Right. I mean, Derek Lewis is the man.
Yeah.
Outside of Francis Ngannou, all his fights have been entertaining.
Yep. So I'm not going to worry too much about the entertainment value of a Derek Lewis future. As long as he's in it, I'll be happy to see it.
I feel like he got a Raw in, though, not getting that Nagano fight, taking the Gon fight.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, but that first Ngannou fight sucked so bad.
Oh, yeah, believe me. Yeah. I still kind of don't want to.
Maybe he got a raw deal. Yeah. Maybe he got a raw deal, but he also doesn't want to fight five rounds. So I'm not going to. He doesn't seem to be particularly. He doesn't seem particularly vocal about the idea that he got a raw deal. You know, he's not out there being like, give me my title shot now. He's saying, if you don't make it three rounds, don't call me.
Nobody wants to fight for five rounds, Zane.
Yeah. Well, nobody who weighs 265 pounds wants to fight for five rounds. You know, I don't know about like Corey Sandhagen or some of those.
I doubt they want to fight five rounds.
Cardio King flyweight.
Or like Nate Diaz, maybe. He might be the only one who's like, give me seven, eight, nine rounds.
Yeah. He's arguing to get it in his contract where he'll open a pay per view with a five round fight.
So. I don't hate that idea.
No. I mean, he's tried to do it before. You know, that's his, the seems to be the negotiation he's got out there. Is that if he's going to fight, it's got to be for five rounds. All right. Well, either way, I got to say, like I said, it's not the biggest win of Derek Lewis's career, but I really love the way he got it. I really love seeing him go out there and just look like a veteran fighter, which, you know, Lewis has never really looked like in his career. He's always looked like he's wild and just on the edge of catastrophe. So,
yeah, he looked in complete control tonight and just stormed the castle of Doc Gallus. I'm thrilled.
Yep. Really fun. All right. That brings us to the co-main event. And if Lewis looked more like a veteran than ever, Stephen Thompson just looked older than ever.
Oh,
I mean,
you got to give some credit to NCAA All-American Wrestling Bilal Muhammad.
I got to give some credit to Bilal Muhammad, but Stephen Thompson also just looked old. And a part of that, maybe too, like Wonder Boy in a small cage is just, it's not good for him.
Yeah, but, and the style of the fight. I mean, Muhammad gave him zero space.
Yeah, Muhammad gave him zero space, but so did... You know, so did Gilbert Burns before this fight, and Thompson looked, you know, like it wasn't a dissimilar performance, but Thompson had a better fight against Gilbert Burns than he had against Bilal Muhammad here.
Well, that could be a million different things.
Yeah, part of that could be the bigger cage. I mean, that was a pay-per-view. It's in the big cage, and Thompson in a small cage, it's just not good for him.
Yeah.
Although
Bilal was ready for him, too.
Yep. Bilal was...
Excellent game plan. I mean, just the way he stayed in the clinch, he just stayed on the positional control and refused to fight in Thompson's wheelhouse. I mean, intelligent, high FIQ performance from Bilal. Called out Kamaru Usman. I thought that was smart. Won't get it, but I think it's very wise.
It's especially smart right now where there's not actually really a welterweight top contender. There should be, you know, Vicente Luque is out there ranked like number four. Leon Edwards is out there ranked number three. These are both potential contenders. But they're not fights that the UFC seems at all interested in making. So if you're going to get into the top five, all of a sudden, if you're going to go out there and pick up a win like Wonder Boy, you might as well just be calling for a title shot, because Masvidal and Burns and Covington, none of them seem particularly close to being a contender at the moment again.
Now, and Edwards was winning that fight until he poked him in the eye.
Yeah. I mean, the Edwards fight, like, that should be a win, a loss for Muhammad, but it's not technically. So ride the wave while you're in position to ride it, you know?
Yeah. And then there's Hamzat's out there also.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's still like two fights away from a title shot, very likely, you know.
Which Bilal could be also, honestly.
Oh, yeah, I mean, Bilal could be, like, I think it's smart for him to call for a title shot, but yeah, he could be two or three. He could be in Leon Edwards territory. This isn't the kind of performance that's going to endear anyone to the idea of seeing Bilal Muhammad fight for the belt.
Oh, absolutely. You know? Like, what is he going to go do that to Kamaru Usman? I don't think so.
No.
But it was definitely a strong performance and his best win to date. I'll give him that also.
Oh, no question. I mean, Muhammad has shown entirely, and this proved it beyond any shadow of doubt. If there's any holdout out there to the idea that Bilal Muhammad is one of the best best game planners in the UFC, this should settle that. Like, he just went out there and absolutely out-thought and out-fought Stephen Thompson, you know?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant.
So he has built his own legacy in the UFC. It's just, it's a lot like the Leon Edwards legacy, which is a legacy that you got to respect it as somebody who's interested in watching the sport and interested in seeing people find greatness in different ways. But the UFC isn't going to like it, and fans don't like it.
No. Being decision heavy is usually isn't a good thing.
Yeah.
I think GSP got away with it because he was so great and so dominant with it.
Well, and people forget that what brought GSP to title contention in the first place was being a high-octane thriller who put people away.
Yeah.
GSP became decision heavy after getting knocked out by Matt Serra. But before that, you watch old GSP fights and you're seeing him like go for jumping head kicks and like running after people and being this dominant, like crushing fighter. And you're like, oh my God, this dude's a killer. And then after that, later on, you see all the control and the legacy protection and all that.
The sport also caught up to him.
Yeah.
He was a little ahead of it.
And yeah.
I feel like the sport caught up.
But
legacy protection. Get out of here with that, Zane.
Well,
legacy protection. Don't you dare disrespect the great Georges St. Pierre.
I didn't think that was disrespectful. He didn't want to lose his belt.
I don't know.
He didn't want to lose his belt. That's fine. So yeah, I'm fine with the call out for the title shot. I think honestly, he should go out there and fight Luque or Burns or Covington first. Any of those fights to get there would make him a top contender. He has to, you know, he's got a loss to Luque in the past. I'd love to see that rematch right now. But he's certainly put himself in a conversation that I never thought Bilal Muhammad would seriously be a part of.
Yeah, that's impressive. It's definitely impressive. Like, he found a way to make it happen.
Yeah.
He's a winner.
He's a thoughtful game planning fighter. He targets what his opponent is bad at. He makes sure he does it really well, and he sticks to plans. You know, you look at like the fight he had against Diego Lima earlier this year, and that was a fight where he just like frustrated Lima to no end with this very safe, very kick control, distance heavy game plan that he never gave Lima a chance to counter. And it's frustrating as hell, but dude will set a tone and he will do a thing that he thinks you can't do. And he'll do it until you prove him wrong.
Very Leon Edwards.
Mm-hmm.
Leon does the same thing.
Yeah. So solid win for Muhammad. For Thompson, like I say, it's this is the worst I've ever seen him look in a loss. And that sucks, but he's also 38 and time is undefeated.
We saw him got absolutely sparked by Anthony Pettis.
Yeah, in a fight that he was otherwise whipping Pettis. Like,
I'm surprised they didn't even mention that on the broadcast in any way, shape, or form. Like, Muhammad and Pettis spent many years training together. They didn't even mention it.
But it wasn't a fight where you came away thinking, Pettis has found the key to beating Stephen Thompson. And certainly Bilal Muhammad didn't do anything like what Pettis did in that fight.
Well, no, Pettis landed one punch.
Yeah. But it, you know, this is to me, like, this is the worst I've ever seen Thompson look in a loss. That knockout was it was bad. It was the only time he's been knocked out, but it wasn't like a fight where it looked like the fight where Thompson got, you know, somebody did something big and dynamic and they were able to get one over on him. This just looked like Bilal Muhammad just went out there and just beat the pants off Stephen Thompson. You know?
Yeah. I mean, he out wrestled him a lot.
Sure. But it was just all one sided.
He never hurt him.
He definitely hurt him. He busted his face up. Thompson was swollen up.
He hurt him?
I mean,
he was never rocked.
He was never rocked, but he was.
That's what I mean when I say hurt. Yeah. I don't mean like superficial bruises and cuts.
But he spent, you know, like a solid 30 seconds on the end of round one just punching him in the head unreturned. And I realized Thompson had his hands in the way and it didn't do any major damage. But it was one-sided. It was
definitely one-sided, definitely dominant, but
definitely
not a lot of damage being dished out.
Sure. I've never seen Thompson get dominated like that. Even against Gilbert Burns, who won a similar fight, you know.
I mean, it's what Matt Brown did to him.
Sure, but even that was a pretty back and forth hard fight. And that felt like a lesson for a young Matt Brown to teach, or for a young Stephen Thompson to learn. This just feels like, I don't know, it felt like Thompson being old a little.
That makes me sad.
All right. I'm sorry. All right. That brings us, though, to a strawweight bout. Amanda Lemos, Angela Hill, and I'm not going to say robbery. I'm not.
This was a brutally
close fight. Great fight. Really back and forth. I think the stats even show that Lemos outlanded Hill in round three with power shots. Let me see. Lemos, she definitely got the edge in round one, no question. There was no question in my mind that she won round one. And then, she got outlanded Hill 18-17 in significant strikes. Hill outlanded her 29-20 in total strikes that round in round three. So it's razor thin. I don't have I'm not at all convinced about the whole 30-27 card. I thought Hill should have got round two, but all rounds were tough. All rounds were close. Even the one where Lemos dropped Hill swarmed back in that round really well. So I'm not going to cry robbery. I will say, however, though, man, what a really rough loss for Hill, and just one of many now where it feels like she has put on an absolutely stellar down to the wire performance and the judges just aren't feeling it.
I mean, honestly, I think it just boils down to her lack of venom. You know, when you got Lemos, who hits so freaking hard and, you know, drops you with a front kick to the face. It's like there's a clear power discrepancy. And like in a lot of Hill's fights, there's a clear power discrepancy. And I can't fault the judges for awarding the heavier puncher or the harder striker. Like it damages the name of the game.
It's just rough too, though, because Hill is so tough herself.
Yeah.
That over the she got dropped early in that fight, but over the long run, Lemos maybe have been landing the bigger shots, but it's not like it felt like the fight wasn't wearing just as hard on Lemos as it was on Hill, you know? Like,
yeah, Hill never went away.
And Lemos certainly got, you know, busted up in her own right. Like, Hill put a lot of pressure on her, put a lot of wear on her. So it's just. Yeah.
So real quick, who do you think won this fight? Did you score?
I thought Hill would get two rounds. I thought that she snuck out the last two rounds, but I'm not calling it like a robbery or anything. I got no problem with Lemos winning it. I just think
that's really how I scored it also. And the third round was so close.
Yeah.
But, like, I'm pretty sure that Hill threw a spinning elbow and dropped Limoges at one point.
Yeah, I mean, like, there is...
Are we not counting that knockdown for some reason?
Well, the replays of it show that Hill hit Limoges in the shoulder, and Limoges went down and, like, you know, was off balance and went down. Okay. Not something that you could call that easily in real time, however. Right. So... You know, in the moment, I was like, I don't know what the judges are going to see there. Did it land clean? I don't know. But Limoges certainly went down for a second. To me, if I'm looking at, like I said, maybe Hill doesn't hit as hard as Limoges, but I'm not thinking that Limoges came out of that fight not being beat up. It was a war. It was a tough war. Yeah. So,
it was a war. Fun, competitive fight.
One fight of the night as well, which I'm at least glad of. At least Hill, you know, she may not got her win bonus out of it, but at least she's got a fight of the night bonus. And her first in 4 years. So
wow, she's been in so many bangs.
5 years. Yeah.
Wow. That's the robbery.
Yeah.
That's the robbery right there. She's long overdue.
Actually, I read that wrong. It's actually her, the one she got against Watterson was her first in 4 years. This is the first since this is her third. She got one. Okay. She got one against Watterson last year. I was looking at this as like, I just saw the two on her record and was having a brain fart moment.
It's the end of the year, Zane. The final fight card of the year. It's been a long season.
Apparently, Dana White also said he thought Hill won that fight. So hopefully, in the past, when that has happened at times, the UFC has given some fighters their win bonus when that has happened on the sly. Like, I think they did it with Matt Brown again, with Tim Means against Sergio Moraes, I believe it was. There have been a few times when that has happened over the years. So hopefully for Hill, that happens again. Like I say, don't think it was a robbery, but I do feel for Hill. Like, she's had a bunch of these fights where she comes back, she does great, she fights her way into these really wild battles, and she just doesn't get the judges to give her the nod. So, fun fight. And, great, you know, rough loss for Hill. Great win for Limoges, though. Keeps her on track, keeps her rolling up the division with 5 straight wins now. And, maybe a fight with, like, Tisha Torres next, something like that.
Yeah, definitely someone with some name value. That's for sure. She needs to make her move now.
More tough fights for Limoges. All right, that brings us to a bantamweight bout. Ricky Simon, Rafael Assunção, and this just makes me a little sad.
It makes you sad. Because, you know, Assunção being the veteran that he is, you got to feel bad for him. But Ricky Simon being unranked, coming up with a huge knockout here, like, that's impressive.
No,
he needed this.
Oh, yeah. It's a huge win for Ricky Simon. Had he not been able to get this win, it would have felt like a very, like, gatekeeper setback for Assunção, where Assunção is basically just like, look, you're never going to get – if you can't get past me right now – I don't know how you're going to climb up this division. But Simone went out there. He got the big win. It's great for him. It's a 4th straight loss for Assunção, though. And it's just kind of the end referendum of a fighter who never got a title shot, was one of the best featherweight or bantamweights in the division for more than half a decade. And it's just going to be forever will go down as one of the most unheralded fighters at 135. And that's never something that you really want to be. You don't want to be the guy that's most forgotten.
Yeah. Talk about an elite journeyman.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he didn't journey. He was in the UFC the whole time. But.
Well, that's still a journey, my guy. If you're not a champion, you're a journeyman.
Is that how it works? I don't know.
Kinda. Like, if you're not fighting for belts, you're a journeyman.
Yeah, I think that for me, the definition of journeyman is somebody who goes from place to place to place to place without ever being an impactful player. I think of it more as
I think that's a gypsy. That's a gypsy.
Not okay. Well, we're very far afield. I would say he's, at the very least, he is one of MMA's all-time great bridesmaids, and that's unfortunate because I
can't believe he didn't make it to a title shot. That's insane,
right?
Like for, the winning streak he posted up
for a
before
guy
he lost to Dillashaw.
Yeah, and for a guy who had wins over TJ Dillashaw, Aljamain Sterling, Marlon Moraes, and Rob Font. Like,
dude, he beat George Masvidal back in 05.
Yeah. Like, for a dude who has beat a lot of great fighters who have fought for and even won belts, you know, he's just never been the guy. So this feels like kind of a sad moment for my longstanding Rafael Assunção fandom. As leader of the Rafael Assunção fan club, I've even mentioned several times before, I don't even think the guy has a highlight video on YouTube.
What are those club meetings like, Zane?
It is just me, and occasionally Connor shows up when he remembers to, you know, wake up in time for one of the meetings. He'll show up like once every 2 months. Otherwise, it's just me.
You have monthly meetings? Damn, that's what's up.
I mean, it's a fan club, you know.
I just hope he doesn't get pimped out from here and go like try bare knuckle or something.
Eagle FC, Bare Knuckle FC, the planes await. If he's near the end of his UFC contract, I hate.
He'll be boxing Jake Paul before we know it.
Oh, I don't want to see that. But he's not. I mean, he's not famous enough to get that. That's the unfortunate.
That's
part.
Right. There's always Lethway in Burma.
No, I'm sure he'll be in Eagle FC by next year. All right. And for Simone, though, big win. Gets him back into ranking. Gets him a ranking spot. I think he's been 15 before or so, like for a month. Gets him back in that door. Fights. We called out Sean O'Malley. That's a good call out. Otherwise, Song Yadong is out there.
I like the way he did it, too. He was like, yeah. I'm not trying to bully him into a fight. If he wants it, cool. If not, that's fine, too.
Yeah,
like that was pretty gangster.
Let him, like, let everybody know that Sean O'Malley is weak and needs protecting. Definitely the tactic to take to get that. But that, you know, true. There's also like rematch with you know, there's a potential rematch in the future with Merab Dvalishvili and fights with guys like Pedro Munhoz and Marlon Vera would be a lot of fun. Like, yeah. there are some fun fights waiting for him in that division if he can keep building momentum.
That Mirab fight was one of the weirdest things I've ever seen in MMA.
Right?
Ah, shit, it was wonky. They definitely should run that back.
Exactly. So, yeah, big win for Simone. Feels like a very much a passing of the torch moment for Assunção, where he's just not that guy anymore. It's been, you know, we're talking three and a half years now since he's got a win.
Yeah.
That sucks.
Such is life.
Yep. All right. That brings us to a lightweight bout. Mateusz Gamrot, Carlos Diego Ferreira, and I really kind of, I was worried for a solid round there, or for a solid 5 minutes in between, I should say, that this was going to be another hard setback for Gamrot, who really seemed like he was not at all comfortable at any moment in this fight after a fast start.
Well, I mean, the whole fight was one crazy scramble.
Yeah.
So it was kind of hard for anyone to look comfortable out there.
True. Just seemed like he could get Fajeda down with ease, but he was not at all comfortable tangling with him on the ground, even for a second. And he was getting less comfortable by the minute hanging out with him on the feet.
But I think it was smart, though, still putting Fajeda there and keeping him defensive and making him work. I thought it was a taxing approach, and it was almost let's see who will run out of gas first.
Yeah, I just thought it was Gamera. Like before that finish, he seemed to be the guy who was looking a lot wobblier, a lot less comfortable standing.
He looked desperate, I think it was. He looked desperate out there, but like oddly in control still. Like how you were saying about Derek Lewis, how he kind of is on the brink of not even being in control at all.
Yeah.
Gamera was walking that line here.
Yeah. And he found, all credit to him, though, he found it. He found his moment. He initiated another scramble, got another takedown, landed that knee on the way up. And, let that be a lesson in always land whatever strikes you can whenever you have the chance. Because that is a strike we see all the time that finishes practically no one.
I've never seen it finish anybody.
Yeah. And it was just the right shot at the right moment. I don't know if it broke a rib or if Fajeda had a previous like separated rib cartilage damage there maybe, or if it was just right on the liver and shut him down. I got to think it was more than that. It was an injury because Fajeda didn't look necessarily like
– it didn't look like a body shot landing.
It looked like he knew that he could not continue fighting in that moment. And told the ref, no, okay, I got to be done now.
Honestly, it could have happened during those crazy-ass scrambles.
Yeah.
They were so explosive and just full throttle that it could have easily happened during that. And then the knee just aggravated it to the point where Fajera just couldn't continue.
You know, and Fajera is not ancient at 36. I'm older than him, so I don't want to be like he's an old man out there. But he is a veteran fighter out there fighting a very young man's game, like, wild, messy, up kick, heavy, violent scrambles. The kind of things that they take me back to Anthony Pettis later in his career when he would go out there and have these wild scrambles with people and be like twisting through body locks and all sorts of stuff like that. And then just started like separating a rib in a fight or breaking a hand in a fight or all these little injuries that were just like cage wear injuries. And this felt like a cage wear injury.
Yeah. Yeah, it did. It was weird. I didn't even know what happened at first.
Yeah.
It was so crazy because Fajera's on one knee and Gamrot kind of has a body lock and he's dropping knees. And then Fajera's like talking to the referee and Gamrot, his English, he does speak English, but it's not his native language. He doesn't know what's going on. Fajera also has an accent. So he just like, I'm going to jump on a rear naked choke.
Yeah.
So like Fajera's trying to quit to the referee and Gamrot just dives on the rear naked choke and just starts squeezing. It's like, man, can you imagine trying to quit because your rib is killing you or whatever? Yeah. And then all of a sudden you're being strangled. And that's got to be a scary moment.
Yeah, no kidding. So big win for Gamrot, though, and it really keeps that rise going where he's, for a guy who lost his UFC debut in a shocker to Guram Katadaladze, he's back being the fringe contender that you kind of hoped he would be coming in as an undefeated KSW champ.
Yeah, he's definitely looking like a prospect, someone who could definitely run up the division and
he's in position now.
Maybe compete for a title.
Yeah, he's in a position now where you're going to look at booking him and you're looking at like Brad Riddell. You're looking at
Fiziev,
Tsarukyan. These are the kind of guys in the bottom of the lightweight top 15 right now that if you're going to beat Fajeda, those are the dudes you're going to be fighting.
Yeah, no kidding. But like, I think he's ready. I think this fight proves he's ready. He can grapple with the best of them.
I mean, he's been at this for 9 years now, and he's only got one loss to his name. If he's not ready now, I don't know when he's gonna be ready.
All right, book him against Fiziev. It's time.
Yeah, go for it. All right, that brings us to a featherweight bout: Cub Swanson, Darren Elkins. And I feel two ways about this. Go ahead.
Two OGs going at it.
And Darren Elkins, he picked up two wins in his last two fights. So part of me is just like, look, you got two OGs. You're going to keep booking them. This is a totally fine fight to book. No big deal, whatever. But the other part of this is that we are in a place where every fight Darren Elkins has, you're just wincing a little harder. And yeah. This was a big wince fight where he just got lit up. Like, this is one of those things where, in retrospect, like going into it, you're like, okay, yeah, if Elkins is winning and Cub Swanson is winning, they both have always wanted to have this fight, make it. That's fine. They're, you know, Cub Swanson, or Elkins is 37, Cub Swanson is 38. They've been at this game forever. No big deal. And then walking away from it, you're going like, man, I didn't need to see that.
Yeah. Darren Elkins, he was fighting in the UFC before there even was a featherweight division.
Oh, yeah. No, dude has been, he has been at this for a long time.
So Vic Rodriguez and I just finished up a sixth round retro that'll air this coming week, since there's no UFC coming up. And we did UFC on Versus 2, which took place in August of 2010. And Charles Oliveira was making his professional – or not his professional, his UFC debut against Darren Elkins.
Yeah.
And just put on one of the most incredible displays of jiu-jitsu you will ever see. It was absolutely gorgeous. And yeah, then dude, fast forward, I'm like, wait a minute. Darren Elkins is fighting this weekend. What the hell?
Yeah. Well, Charles Oliveira's champ. Like,
well, I know. That's it's my whole insane. Mind exploded, Zane.
Yeah. I mean, it's weird for me, especially because, you know, it's weird for me to look back and see that Elkins has been a featherweight since 2011. Because in the back of my mind, I still think of him as an ex-lightweight. Like,
right.
I still think of him as a guy who was a lightweight when I knew him, and then dropped down at some point, and he's been fighting at featherweight for a little while now, sure, but not 10 years.
Yeah, actually that Oliveira loss was his last fight at lightweight.
Yeah. Is also only his second fight in the UFC.
Yeah.
So,
man,
Elkins has been at this a long time, and I am sure that this is not the end of his fighting career, because I don't think that anything will be the end of his fighting career short of, I don't know, like, I can't imagine what is going to cause Darren Elkins to walk away from MMA. But this was a rough loss.
Yeah, you know? Swanson looks so great, man. He looked aggressive. Yeah. He wasn't going too wild. He was staying within himself and just landing powerful combinations, and then went for it and threw that nasty wheel kick that connected and got a standing TKO.
I had an inkling going into this that, like, Cub has had a lot of weird fights. He's had some up and down fights in his career. He's had some losses. He's had some bad beats standing. He's had some bad beats on the ground, whatever. You know, there have been some rough fights for him. But one of the things that's never really worked against Cub Swanson is brawling with him. And I had a really bad feeling going into this fight that, like, Elkins was just going to put himself in exactly the bad place to be with Cub Swanson. And, man, Cub looked great. This was Cub getting the perfect Cub Swanson fight.
Yeah. Even when there was that moment where Cub's takedown defense was exposed,
mm-hmm.
I still think that any version of Cub Swanson does this to Darren Elkins.
Yeah. I mean, certainly a Darren Elkins now that ends up having to strike more than he ever used to. Part of that is he got a bit better at striking. The version of Elkins going back to, you know, you go back to 2014, 2015, and you're really looking at a guy who just only could wrestle and cling to you. And Elkins has since, his hands, he got a little deftness in his hands, a little bit of surprise in how quickly he could nail somebody with an overhand.
Yeah.
But he's also lost enough of a step now that he just has to rely on that a lot more in every fight. And the version of him that has to rely on that even just a little more gets built by or beat by Cub Swanson every single time.
Yep, it's so true.
Now though, we got to get finally Cub Swanson versus Alex Caceres. Can we do this fight already? I've wanted to see that fight for 5 years now, and we're more prepared for it than ever.
Yeah. Okay. I'm here for it, Zane. Yeah. I'm definitely here for it.
Caceres even snagged a ranking spot this last week. He's on a five. Yeah, he's ranked 15th now off 5 straight wins.
Damn, good for him.
Put him in there with Swanson. I want to see it.
And if he wins, give him a title shot. Yeah, sure. I said it.
Okay. I mean, you're dreaming, but yes. I will share that dream with you. All right. Let's drop down now to the prelims and our featured prelim bout, a middleweight fight. Gerald Meerschaert, Dustin Stoltzfus, and damn if Meerschaert is never going to look like the guy all the way through and is always going to be the guy if you can't go out there and put him away. Gerald Meerschaert is not a dude you want to hang around with.
Mm-mm. You don't leave him in the game.
Nope.
You go out and you knock him out. That's what you need to do. And if you don't, yikes, you're in big, big trouble. That dude is quicksand. The longer you let him be able to touch you or grab you or hold on to you, just you're flirting with danger. He's so crafty and so skillful. Even if he's exhausted, he can still strangle you.
Yeah.
And like Stoltzfus, that's exactly what happened here. Stoltzfus fought him in his own wheelhouse. And like the wrestling was great and the control is great. But when that squeeze gets locked in, what are you going to do?
We've seen it with Muradov. We've seen it with Daron Wynn. We've seen it with Trevin Giles and Oscar Pechoda and Eric Spicely. And, you know, we've seen it over and over throughout Gerald Meerschaert's career. Like, if you let him hang around and even if you have a really great start, even if you're brutalizing this dude, even if you're on top of him, beating him up, you just don't leave him in there. And another great win for Meerschaert. This was a step back fight for him. He just took it on short notice to get another payday. I get it. I'm not against it. But hopefully they can give him something a little bigger next time. Heck, I'd even love to just see him go out there and fight somebody like Bruno Silva. You know?
Meerschaert is one of those guys that I don't ever care who he fights.
Yeah.
Absolutely. It doesn't matter. I'll watch him fight anybody. I'll watch him fight at the local Arby's or something.
Sure.
It's always going to be fun.
Yep. All right. That brings us to a heavyweight bout, or a super heavyweight bout.
Super heavyweight bout. That's right.
The first ever super heavyweight fight in UFC, modern UFC history. The first time in UFC history that a heavyweight fighter has ever missed weight.
Yikes.
And Justin Taffa, I mean, to be fair to him, he had apparently a miserable camp experience because he kept getting locked out of his states, kept going, the places where he was staying kept going on lockdown.
Right.
And so he had to keep changing training constantly. But you're only 6 feet tall, at least by the tape, my man. You can't, there's no excuse for you to be floating around at 280 pounds, you know? Like, you're not out there. This isn't Brock Lesnar out here where we look at you and be like, oh, my God, how does he do it? You know? So.
No, he's got the fattest legs I've ever seen. Yeah, not fat, but just like tree trunks.
Yeah, but he's also just got a big spare tire. You know?
Oh, he's a big boy. He's big boned, Zay.
He's big boned. He's got that husky build. But he threw a hell of a head kick to knock out Harry Hunsucker. So
it was so hard that Hunsucker had his guard up and it didn't matter. In fact, I think Hunsucker knocked himself out.
Yeah.
I think he kicked Hunsaker's hands into Hunsaker's own chin and knocked him out that way.
Yeah, it was brutal. It was cool. I don't even care that much that he missed weight. It was a...
I'm glad he missed weight. What do you mean? Yeah. He's got a super heavyweight head kick knockout. Like,
it's true.
Yes.
History was made.
History was made.
All right. That brings us to a catchweight bout. Melissa Gatto, Sahara Eubanks, and...
I didn't see this coming. I did not see this coming.
No.
At all.
Eubanks started this fight out exactly like I expected, despite Bisping's protestations that Eubanks should outbox Melissa Gatto. She just went out there, took her down, bullied her from top control, and... She tried a sacrifice throw and dragged Gatto on top of her, but swept her immediately to bully her from top control. And it was a dominant round. And then she went down and she got an immediate takedown to start round two, and she got swept. And that was the beginning of the end, because it's clear that the bad weight cut, and still throughout her career has always been the case, a really punishing fight just saps the gas tank of Eubanks pretty terribly.
Yeah, it did. But if Gatto was going to win, I figured she would have caught a submission from the bottom, because sure, she was trying.
Yeah.
You know, Eubanks was doing a great job of remaining safe, and her positional control was fantastic.
Yeah.
But Gatto was throwing tons of stuff up. So I was like, you know, if Gato's going to win, it's going to be a submission of some sort, something crafty. I did not expect a front kick to the body to come up with the stoppage.
It was a brutal kick, though. Eubanks was leaning into it, moving forward, and the ball of the foot caught her right square in the belly button. And like, that is a hard kick. That sucks. You know, that is a brutal place to get to eat that kind of kick. Especially if you're already pretty gassed, and Eubanks in that third round, like, those were arm punches she was throwing. She was huffing and puffing. So, win for Gatto.
Poor Bisping. Why was he telling her to box? That was
weird. I don't know.
That's the striker in him, I guess.
Dominic Cruz is going to start calling out Bisping after this.
Man. Where's Brian Stan when you need him?
Gatto and Swanson picking up performance of the night bonuses out there. And hey, I love to see it, because that was a really unexpected TKO or KO body kick TKO for Gatto. She's a young fighter just trying to make her way in the sport, get that money. I'm happy about it.
Tough night to dish out the bonuses, since there were many cool finishes.
Yeah.
And performances, like, even Charles Jourdain, I thought he put forth a great effort.
Yeah.
Awesome performance.
Yeah. Let's jump right on that right now. We're running to the end of our time here. Charles Jourdain meeting Andre Ewell in Ewell's first fight up at featherweight. And Ewell came out like, you know, he came to scrap. He put out a call a couple months ago on Twitter that ended up in my feed, asking fans what fight he should take next in his first fight at 145. And several people were like, Charles Jourdain, that's the fight we want to see. And it was a cool fight. Like, it's a tough booking. It wasn't, you know, nobody's going to be like, if you ask fans what they want to see, they're going to want to see you in a tough fight. They're going to want to see you in a fight where you can win, but it's going to not be the easiest booking in the world.
Right.
And this was that fight. Like, Ewell got his chance to get shots off. They went to war. But there's a reason, and Jourdain made it incredibly clear why all the people that beat him take him down.
Oh, yeah.
Like, he is not a dude you want to go out there and just
trade balls with. Ewell had a good first round.
Yep.
Outside, after that, though, nah. Jourdain just completely took over.
Yeah.
I mean, those leg kicks were damaging. He was being so aggressive. He was just pushing the pace, in complete control, and just building that pressure and slowly just overwhelming Ewell, who was fading, by the way, after that first round. And man, just the savagery, the primal screams. I was just so here for it. Jourdain was just letting it out. And at the end of the fight, he's all screaming like, come on. And then delivered that nasty, this is Sparta kick and Yule falls over. I'm just like, yikes. Talk about savage. Like, that's how you end a fight. If it's going to the scorecards, that's how you end a fight.
That was a cool, really cool fight from Jourdain. Hard loss for Ewell. I feel for him. But, like, you know, like, at the moment, Jourdain is kind of just a dude in the featherweight division. You know, he's a lot of fun. This was a great win. But it's not like people were like, oh, yeah, go out and fight Hakeem Dawodu or Sadiq Youssef or, you know, even, what's his name with the country rap album?
Bryce Mitchell
or something. You know, like, they aren't. We're not talking fringe contender Charles Jourdain here. It's just a fun action fight, and it's
It's not like Yule is a world beater.
No, but it's a tough reckoning for Yule coming up to 145 and still running into trouble. You know.
Yeah, I don't think weight class is his issue.
No, it's variety has always been his issue. The fact that he is great as a long range boxer, throwing 1-2s, and that's really his only spot in the pocket, in the clinch, on the mat. Anywhere else the fight goes, Andre Ewell does not have a lot of tools to win that fight.
Or the gas tank.
Yeah. So, you know, Charles Jourdain, he took advantage. Great win, fun fight.
Yeah, it was the last fight on his contract, too. So it was good to see him put forth that extra effort.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully the UFC brings him right back, because they would be foolish to let him walk away. He is exactly the kind of fighter that if I see him on the middle of a card like I do here, I'm like, yeah, I want to watch that fight.
Oh, yeah.
All right. That brings us to a catchweight bout. Raquel Pennington, Macy Chason, or Chason. And it started well for Chason. She came out and she was landing the harder shots. She was, you know, forcing Pennington to try to brawl with her, really letting her power be a deciding factor. But Pennington just does not fold. And unfortunately for Chason, she is not yet. That is not yet her hallmark.
Yeah, and I think Rocky owes her corner a lot of credit, too, for telling her to cut the shit and let her hands go and start acting like the better athlete out there, because that's what she did in the second round. She came out with a completely different demeanor. She got aggressive. She starts letting her hands go. She was backing up Chason, and, you know, she just – put it on her. She just acted like she was the better fighter, the better athlete, and she put her away.
Drew the shot out of her and then snatched up that. They called it a 10-finger guillotine, but it was really like a 10-finger guillotine that she modified to like a ninja choke.
It was like an arm end 10-finger guillotine.
Yeah. It was a fun, funky little front choke. I love seeing fighters work headlock series like that. Mm-hmm. I think it's still one of the most underdeveloped aspects of MMA, where you get people shooting all the time. Like, the opportunity to work a really good front headlock game is always going to be there in MMA.
Who was it? Oh, it was Stoltzfus who tried that modified Peruvian necktie on Newshart.
Yeah.
I thought that was ballsy. I was like, you're going to submit Gerald Beerschart? What?
Yeah, that's the problem. The difference between doing that kind of thing on Macy Chason and doing it on Gerald Beerschart is that, like, you are making mistakes if you are trying to grapple with Gerald Beerschart and you're not submitting him.
Right. But what I liked is Rocky didn't pull guard here with this. Yeah,
exactly. She did not get herself in any bad position. Just like Alexi and people work that front head. Like, if you're going to sprawl, you've still got the person's neck wrapped up. You're still, you know, right there to make something happen. Great win for Pennington. In the mix, in that top five, especially with Juliana Pena winning the title now, you know, that opportunities abound for fighters in the top five. She could do a rematch with Misha Tate. She could fight Ketlin Vieira. You know, there are fights to be made for Pennington at 135 again.
Yeah, she definitely has new life.
Yep. For Chasson, though, missing featherweight for this, I realize that her corner, her team says it was her third cut in 6 months, and it was just her body couldn't do it. But, you know, that's rough. There's barely a division at 145. You kind of got to make that weight.
Yeah, there's literally nowhere else to go.
Yeah. So this was a tough loss for her. That brings us to a heavyweight bout. Dontel Mays, Josh Parisian, and just a pretty one-sided win for Mays. Credit to him for just realizing that being far bigger than Parisian, he could just make that physicality work for him, being bigger and stronger. Like, don't go out there and just have a slow-paced one-for-one kickboxing match with this dude. Horse him around.
You know? Yeah, he did what he took the path of least resistance.
Yeah.
Tons of top control. And he even did he landed a teabag or two from the north-south position before the bell in the second round.
Picked himself up a win bonus and a restraining order.
And he's on a list somewhere, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Groin strikes are illegal, sir. Like,
even with your own. You're not allowed to strike somebody with your groin. He did.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely. He just started humping Parisian's head with power, venomous pumping.
With power. I don't know if you've ever taken a cup to the face, but it doesn't feel good.
You know, I try not to.
You try not to take the cup.
I try to keep myself in my life. I've tried to keep myself out of that situation. It's a life goal.
You're not being adventurous enough with your face, Zane.
Yeah, you know, I hear that a lot.
You gotta put yourself in harm's way sometimes.
Yeah, I'll think about that. I'll consider it carefully from a distance.
But that was the highlight. Like, crucifix from the, or elbows from the mounted crucifix, that's all good and well. But seeing someone actually, a heavyweight teabag, no less, that's pretty cool.
Yeah, he went 100%. What's Fortnite on him?
Oh, yeah. Not that I play Fortnite, but I'm aware that people teabag each other on Fortnite.
Yeah, I have a nephew who's a teenager. I've seen it.
You ain't got a lot of kick it, Zane. We know you got the bruised up thumbs. We know you're up all night.
That's right. Calling people noob, poning noobs on the internet.
Owning people.
That's right. All right. That brings us to a lightweight bout. Jordan Leavitt, Matt Sales, and man, this really felt like Matt Sales just walking himself into a loss. No discredit to Leavitt, who has a very crafty ground game and absolutely made the submission happen, made that inverted submission triangle choke happen. No question. Leavitt did everything he needed to do to win this fight. But Matt Sales did not need to spend nearly this much time grappling with Jordan Leavitt. There was no impetus for that.
Oh, he should have spent zero time grappling with him. Like, there were moments where he was going for the takedown.
Yeah, I mean, this inverted triangle was off of a double leg he shot for and got.
Yeah.
It was pure foolishness.
Yeah. Man, Leavitt's just one of those guys. It honestly reminds me of Damian Maya, the way he just wants to grab you. And once he grabs, that's all he needs. He just needs to get a hold of you. And Charles Oliveira the same way.
Damian Maya and Charles Oliveira didn't lose to Claudio Puelles. Leavitt still got some ironing to do on that style. But,
well, yeah, I mean, completely, I mean, ends of the opposite ends of the spectrum, but the same sort of
it's
just all he needs to do is get close.
Yeah, he is a fighter, absolutely working to tangle you up with him at all costs. And if you're not as good a grappler as him and you play that game, you will lose that game.
Like, so, if you look at the finishes on his resume, like, you got heel hooks, anacondas, arm triangles, a freaking slam to Wat Myman, of all people.
Yep.
It's just it's funky. It's a hodgepodge of funkiness.
Yep.
And that's just from him getting a hold of people and making things happen. Like, people need to stay at range and strike with this guy.
Yeah, I like it. I like to see it. Sales just made some huge mistakes there, and that's rough for him because, you know, this is a dude who's been sitting on the sidelines for 2 years now to come back for this, and you know that like. It's probably not his UFC exit, but it might be. I don't know.
Yeah, you never know.
It's a bad loss. Anyway, that wraps us up. Derek Lewis coming out, putting on a hell of a beating on Chris Daukaus for his record-setting KO victory in the main event. Great to see. Love it. Bilal Muhammad establishing himself as a welterweight contender. I am shocked, and I don't know if he's going to ever get a title shot out of it, but he's put himself in the conversation, so that's cool too.
And it was the last card of the year, and it was fire. Absolute last card of fire. The year,
tons and tons of fun. Great time. We will see everyone in 3 weeks' time. You can find me in the meantime on Twitter at TheZaneTime. You can find Eddie on Twitter at TheEddieMercado. You can find both of us over at BloodyOva.com. Give us a like, subscribe to our podcast, Bloody Ova Presents, on SoundCloud, YouTube, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, all those places. Thanks, everyone, for tuning in, and we will see you in 2022.
Thank you for listening to this Bloody Ova Presents production. To check out more of our content, hop over to the Bloody Elbow Presents SoundCloud and iTunes pages, and be sure to subscribe to our YouTube channel, which is also titled Bloody Elbow Presents. We're also on Apple TV, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Spotify, TuneIn, Overcast, Player FM, and Amazon Music. Just search for Bloody Elbow Presents, and you'll get brand new shows throughout the week, including Care Don't Care, The Mookie and Crookie Show, The Best of the Come On Now MMA Podcast, Crooklyn's Corner, The MMA Vivisection, The Level Change Podcast, Show Money, The Sixth Round Post Fight Show, Sixth Round Retro, The MMA Depressed Us, and Radio Style Play-by-Play for every UFC pay-per-view. You can also follow us on Twitter at Bloody Elbow and on Facebook at facebook.com/Bloody Elbow Blog, and of course on BloodyElbow.com.